All right, so let's go ahead and get started. We may have a few people joining us here in the next few minutes, and that's okay. But in consideration of everybody who is here on time, let's get started. And if you would, please join me in an opening prayer. Our gracious Heavenly Father, we thank you, Lord, for giving us the opportunity to join together today as a Deer Springs Ranch family. We pray, Father, that you would guide our hearts, guide our minds as we discuss issues and share information and make decisions on behalf of all of the owners at Deer Springs Ranch. We ask for your Spirit's guidance to give us strength and wisdom and a spirit of community as we work together for Deer Springs Ranch. And we pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Okay. It looks like everybody is frozen on my screen. No, maybe not. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So let's get started with our roll call. I know, Jennifer, you've already done most of that, if not all of it. Is there anything else we need to add in terms of roll call?
Nope, I've got them all.
Sally, you're muted.
Sally Miller, we know you're trying to say something, but we can't hear you. You're muted. Not sure what's going on. Maybe she has a problem with her phone connection. The other thing I wanted to mention in terms of roll call is that with us, or Larry Clarkson with us as board members today, they're both not going to be able to attend. So that is part of the official record. Jennifer, anything else before we go on to the Zoom meeting instructions?
Nope, I got it all.
Okay, thank you. So in terms of the Zoom meeting instructions, just a reminder that our Zoom meeting is being recorded, and all of the information that's being shared during the Zoom meeting will be transcribed using an official electronic transcription service that gets converted into written meeting minutes by Cindy Olson, who consistently does an outstanding job of that for us. So if you are going to make any statements, ask any questions, provide any information as part of our meeting, we simply ask that you state your name and lot number at the beginning of your comments or questions, and that makes it easier for Cindy when we're doing the transcription into the written meeting minutes in the future to make sure we know who is saying what during the meeting. All right.
And the chat. And the chat function.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about the chat. Yep. At the bottom of your screen, there's a chat option where you can send a message, a typed message, either to an individual or to the whole group. And Jennifer is the moderator who manages that the chat room, and she will see questions. If it's appropriate to just respond individually, she'll do that. If it's something that needs to be brought up for the entire group, then Jennifer will make sure that that gets done as well. And for all of us, if you're not actively speaking, we request that you keep your computer or your phone on mute. That way we'll keep any background noise to a minimum. All right, with that, thank you, everyone. And we will turn it over to Cindy for the presentation and approval of our meeting minutes from last month. Take it away, Cindy.
Thank you, Mike. And thank you for being generous with your compliment. The July meeting minutes were sent out to all the board members, and I did receive back an approval for them that there were no corrections needed. So if somebody would like to move, we accept them as submitted.
I move we accept the minutes as submitted by Cindy. We have a second.
A second.
Okay, board members, all in favor, say aye or raise your hand aye.
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 Okay, any opposed? All right, the meeting minutes as submitted by Cindy have been approved and adopted. Thank you very much, Cindy. Appreciate it. Okay, the next item on our agenda is to have a conversation with Derek Starley. Derek's the assistant fire warden for Kane County. We had asked Spencer Rollo to participate, but unfortunately Spencer was sent off to help out with a fire up in, I believe, up in Idaho. Not sure exactly where. And then, of course, as most of you heard earlier, Derek invited John Schmidt to participate. There are really two main topics that I wanted to have you guys address today. One is to just have a question and answer session regarding the fire mitigation project for Meadow Canyon. That was a point of discussion at our board meeting last month, and there were some concerns and some questions raised that we definitely want to have addressed by the experts. And then the second item is to follow up on a question from one of our members on the community wildfire preparedness plan that was discussed and presented at a previous annual meeting at the ranch. I believe it was 3 or 4 years ago. And one of the members had a question last month about, you know, any follow-up that may have needed to take place or should have taken place, and if there is any ongoing program that would allow Deer Springs Ranch owners to participate in the community wildfire preparedness plan. So with that as a backdrop, Derek, I'll turn it over to you. I'm not sure if you want to give just like a little bit of an overview on the Meadow Canyon fire mitigation project, kind of where are we at in that process, and provide any updates. Probably a good thing to start with that, and then we'll open it up for questions and answers following your update.
Perfect.
So take it away, Derek.
So with our project, we've hit quite a few hiccups along the way with just getting it out to bid and all that kind of stuff, and that's why it's taken so long for us to really get the project going. And then on top of that, we had to do a ARC clearance because we're bringing machines in. They did find 6 sites out on this project, so we had to go in, adjust our maps a little bit so that we don't take the machines through those areas. But if I can share my screen real quick, I'll show you the map of the areas. Says it's disabled.
I just re-enabled it for you, Derek. Sorry.
You're good.
Hang on. Okay, there you go.
So here's the map. Can everybody see that? Perfect. So the orange spots here are where the machine is going to be going through and masticating the trees. We're going to be doing a 40-foot spacing with 20-foot clearing along the road. I know that the oak is really overgrown on the road, making it hard for us to get in with a safe ingress and egress from a fire standpoint. But you can see the map here. Here's the south end here. Right as you come into the association's property, it'll start in, do a little mastication right in this corner, and then move up around and just keep moving north here. And the red spots are actually going to be a hand treatment that we're hoping to get together next year once we have the funding for it. Come into the Ponderosa pine stand up here, do some hand piles, and then eventually in the winter come in and burn those piles. But that'll be, like I said, next year that we come in and do all these little red spots. So what we're focusing on right now is just the yellow, coming in, getting the mastication going. I talked to Norris Church, who is the contractor that was awarded the bid earlier today, and he's wanting to start on it as early as Monday. So you may see me and Norris Church out there walking the property, getting a feel for the land and showing him where he can start. So, yeah, that's basically an overview of the project. Are there any questions on the project?
Thank you, Derek.
May I ask a question? So I'm just making sure I understand what you just said, since I haven't been to a lot of the meetings because of technical difficulties. So you're saying you've got, in quotes, some kind of a machine that is trimming areas for fire hazards? Is that my understanding of what you just said?
Yes. So it's a excavator that has a grinder on the front of it instead of a bucket that'll be coming in and actually grinding the trees to the ground and spreading that mulch across the ground, which actually helps out with quite a bit. Erosion being one of the major ones, with having those chips on the ground, it helps with erosion so that when we get these heavy rains and stuff, it doesn't just wash away everything.
And we've had no fires at the ranch, have we? Have there been any fires at all?
We have had a couple, just little single trees. Mm-hmm. We've had the community members out there helping us with them. But we've gotten them taken care of very, very quick, just to a very singular tree. So they have not grown in any fashion.
Well, thank you for what you're doing, you and the crew. Thanks.
No problem.
Yeah, thank you, Sally, for your question. And just to follow up on that, I just wanted to reiterate the fact that what we're talking about here is fire mitigation. And so the whole point of the work that's being done by Kane County is to try to make the roads and the areas adjacent to the roads as easily accessible as possible in the event that there ever is a major fire at the ranch that requires a lot of equipment and a lot of personnel to get out to the fire to be able to take care of it quickly. So, you know, the whole point is, you know, get rid of a lot of the dead brush, dead trees that are just, you know, either on the ground or still standing. A lot of the dead trees are still standing. Get them out of the way. Eliminate them as a fire fuel source. And then, again, I know a big concern by a lot of people is we want to keep the nice view. You know, we don't want Deer Springs Ranch to become a great big open dirt pit, you know, with no trees. And that's part of the planning process, planned out by the experts, you know, Derek and Spencer and others, to provide trees that are still going to be there, brush that is still going to be there in appropriate places to allow us to have a nice rural view, but at the same time eliminate any unnecessary fuel and dead trees and dead branches. Derek, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of benefits to a fuel reduction project. Number one being fire. It'll help us get in, take care of these fires quickly, contain them small. They won't grow large like the Left Fork fire did. Another thing is watershed. When you're taking out all these trees, these juniper trees that are sick, they have mistletoe in them. It helps your guys' watershed around the ranch anyways. And then another thing that a lot of people don't think about is the wildlife, the deer, the turkeys, all that kind of stuff. I actually really like to be in an open area. They like a little bit of coverage, but you'll see a lot more deer, possibly elk up in your country. And, of course, the turkeys are going to be roaming around as well. So, yeah, any other questions for me on the project?
Yes, I've got one. This is Michael Jordison, Lot 67. Do you have anything to do with the fire mitigation east of the North Gate? I'm sorry, north north of the North Gate, headed up towards Kings Creek or, you know, the plateau there. Bryce Cannon.
So that one is actually going to be John Schmidt's expertise. He's been working with the Forest Service on that, so I'll let John go ahead and talk on that.
All right. My question is, there are some enormous piles of wood sitting there. Are they going to grind them? Are they going to burn them? they took a lot of trees, and that seems more of a fire danger to me than the trees that were standing currently. But that was my question, is what's going to happen with all those big piles of wood?
As Derek mentioned, I've been working with Forest Service. My name's John Schmidt. I'm Wildland Urban Interface Coordinator with the state of Utah Forestry for the Southwest area. Work real close with Derek and Spencer. And first of all, can everybody hear me okay? We're good? Okay. So I don't want to steal any thunder from the Forest Service, but that is a Forest Service project on Forest Service ground. One thing to point out is Derek's project is in cooperation with private landowners on the private side of the fence. Fire knows no boundary. If we get a fire, it crosses from private to Forest Service and back and forth. So that's why we're concurrently treating areas on that border. Those piles that are on the Forest Service ground that have been part of a project, it's called a shared stewardship project. So it's emphasizing areas adjacent to private land and communities and reducing those fuels to something that we can, as Derek stated, handle during an event, be more effective with crews and aerial resources. Those piles will be burnt. They may not be burnt this year. They may sit there a year to cure. We look at how green the material is, whether it can be disposed of, in a safe fashion, obviously, in the wintertime. As you know, the Left Fork fire was a result of some prescribed fire on the ground. So we're obviously aware of that. We're going to be cautious. And I say we're, I'm speaking a little bit for the Forest Service right now. I would suggest we didn't have time to invite one of the Forest Service folks to this meeting, but I think should in the future, and they can answer those questions directly. If I'm not mistaken, there is an effort to allow the public to go into some of those decks and cut firewood out of them.
Thank you. That was my next question.
Right. So what I would suggest is that you call the district in Panguitch for the Forest Service and ask them directly. I know you probably need a permit. I don't know if it's going to cost anything because obviously we want to utilize that material rather than burn it. So I mean that in a nutshell is what happened there. They treated 30 acres of mastication. So they ground the trees up on 30 acres of that ground and then 139 acres of mechanical which they went along. Those are the decks that you see along the roads. Those were thin. So in order to secure that road, if we did have an event, that we can get in and out a little safer than what we could before. And then there was 2,800 acres of what they call cut and lop. So they thin the trees out, they lop it down so it's sitting on the ground. And that reduces the intensity of the fire to where aircraft can be more effective. They can actually, if necessary, they can burn that area off. There is some talk of additional work to be done in that area with some extra funding that they received. So there may be more to come. I know they wanted to modify some of those treatments. But in a nutshell, that's where that's at. So there's a vast amount of acres that were treated. They spent upwards of $300,000+ on those projects. And the contracting was run through the state as a cooperative Forest Service and state joint effort, if you will. So that's pretty much that. And if there's any other questions.
Just one more. Due to the cuts, that north gate is now being flooded out every rainstorm. Some of what they altered was the drainage. Is there any effort to fix that or resolve that? Do you know?
Not that I'm aware of, but I'll make a note of that and ask the forest folks directly and see if I can get an answer for you. And like I say, probably if we – there wasn't any work done, earthwork done as far as the drainage itself other than masticating the trees alongside. And it would affect some of that. I'm not going to say it wouldn't. So if there is a change there and they need to address some other – effects that it's having downstream, that would be something that we could bring up to the district.
And, yeah, we come into the ranch that way every time, and we see the difference. The drainage is literally coming right through our gate, you know, through that north gate, versus heading out off to what we call the Red Pond or whatever, the Red Lake. It has changed the drainage.
Okay. Well, yeah, and that's what we need to do is make sure that we, you know, are addressing that with the proper agency, and the Forest Service would be the folks to have that discussion with. And I will pass that along, and then also if we could have them join the meeting in the future. Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You bet.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you, John, for all the information. That's very helpful. And a couple of things. I was up on the ranch this past week, and I took my family up, you know, that forest road to go up behind the Pink Cliffs. And, you know, a couple of my family members saw that up there for the first time. And when we were driving back down to, well, we went up on the west side. On the road that goes to the west side, you kind of go up around the back of the Pinks, then you come down, back down to the forest gate through the east side. And when we were coming down through that east side road, there were a couple of big stretches where it looked like we were literally just driving through a riverbed.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it had been washed out so badly that I considered at one point turning around and going all the way back up the other way. I ended up not doing that. I kept continuing to come south on that road. But it is worse than I've ever seen it in the last 5 years.
Right. Just so you know. Right. And I can understand that. I'm not going to say that there wasn't some effect to some of the cutting. There, you know, obviously is. But also I will say I've been on several forest roads and some of these storms this year have seemed to be way worse. I mean, off the charts worse as far as sitting in one place and putting down a lot of moisture. So, granted, there's always an effect to doing fuels that we'd be crazy to admit that or not to admit that there isn't an effect. When you look at fire, you know, you look at a fire triangle and how fire really starts and the all those components, oxygen, ignition through lightning or people, and then fuels. Fuels are the only thing that we really can control and have an effect on how fire reacts and affects our private lands and our forest lands. So I hear you. We'll pass that along. And I've got only a couple more thoughts real quick if there's no other questions about the Forest Service part.
I just had one quick question. Can either you or Derek provide us with the phone number? You suggested we call the Forest Service in Panguitch to see if owners can get the firewood or firewood permit. Do you have a phone number that we could share during this meeting?
I don't have it's the district phone number. I don't have it right in front of me. If you Google Dixie National Forest Panguitch Ranger,
you can just provide that.
Yeah, we can email that out to you.
Yeah, just email it back. Yeah. To one or all of us. You know, to Jennifer, I guess, is the primary contact.
Right.
So just get that phone number to Jennifer, and then she can distribute it out to all the participants on the meeting that are interested.
Okay. All right.
I'm sorry, Jennifer. I just volunteered you. for a task. I apologize.
And John, that's the DSROA at DeerSpringsRanch.org email address.
Okay. All right. And if I don't get it, I'm sure Derek can follow up too and get it. We'll get it to you though.
Okay.
Thanks, John. And you said you had another comment or two, so go ahead.
And I don't mean to take a lot of time, but you had a question on the CWPP, the Community Wildfire Preparedness Plan. That is still in effect. I apologize for, you know, we kind of let the ball drop a little bit there through the pandemic. But we will get back on track. What I would be asking for is, possibly three members of the HOA to be on that committee. I'm not sure if that was decided early on in that process, but it'd be great to have like a core group of folks to keep that plan on track, and direct some of our efforts in the right direction, the way the HOA wants to, keep things going. So that's one thing. We realize that there is the plan and it is still in effect. And it is actually being used. A lot of the, efforts that Spencer and Derek are going with refer back to that plan and why we are doing some of that work. With that said, I just wanted everybody to know there's a new effort and a new funding stream that is available to communities, and it's called the Community Wildfire Defense Grant. And it's been made available through the infrastructure bill, and those funds identifies $1 billion over the next several years for communities to apply for these grants. And they can range anywhere up to $200,000 to $10 million to do fuels work around the community. But individual communities can apply for these grants. And so if there's somebody that is just dying to write a grant, which I'm sure there are. I know I just can't wait to write grants. But if there's somebody with that skill set that's in the HOA that can help us apply for those grants, we'll guide folks through it. But we really were, you know, I know you hate to hear something from state government or federal government. We're stretched pretty thin. I cover 5 counties and, you know, applying for grants throughout all those 5 is pretty tough. So if there's a desire from somebody in the community to help us write a grant to secure some funding to do some of that, fuels work, I always look at it as if I own property in a community I deal with, I'd much rather see green trees than burnt sticks, obviously. So we're in the mode of trying to protect the community to preserve those values. You will see, I know it was mentioned some of the fuels work. Our forests are overstocked right now. So not only do we deal with dead fuel, but we also deal with green trees, and green trees are what carries fire. Dead trees don't carry fire. It's the green needles and the resins in those needles that carry fire from tree to tree to tree to tree. Dead does increase the intensity. I'm not saying that we don't want to treat dead trees also, but green trees are what carry fire. And that's a lot of times a misnomer that people don't realize that. And that's why we thin green trees. We thin the fuel out so that it doesn't go tree to tree to tree. So with that said, I'll provide some information also along with that contact, for these grants. And, like I say, if we could get a core group of people for the CWPP to maintain that, and possibly go for this grant money, that'd be great. That'll help everybody. That's pretty much it in a nutshell.
All right, very good. Kevin Poole, lot 64. Now that we've had a discussion about this stuff, the questions and the concerns that I personally raised at the board meeting are directly about erosion. I know we had mentioned earlier the areas there in the yellow alongside Crawford Canyon are going to be masticated, where we're going to have wood chips all through that area. Is it my understanding that it will be between trees every 40 feet, or is the 40 feet expanse just the hand treated area along Meadow Canyon is one question. The area along Crawford has got quite an angle to it. And if we have a lot of broken up ground in that area from an excavator with a masticator on the end of it, which is going to chew that dirt up considerably, then we're going to put down however many tons of wood shavings on top of it. What's going to happen to dried out wood shavings next monsoon season with a bunch of torn up dirt? It looks to me like that's all going to be about 6 to 8 feet deep across Meadow Canyon Road and bury the entirety of the intersection of Crawford and Meadow Canyon. Now, not being an expert, was there an environmental impact study, an erosion prevention study done on these areas? I'm all for fire mitigation. 100% don't want my house burned. The next question, it was my understanding that in the red areas was where it was to be hand cut, stacked, and in the future burned from a document that I saw. Now, if we allow oak brush to regenerate over a 2 or 3 year period, if we don't get that done in short order, are we not just creating a larger fire hazard that we're going to go into an oak brush pile from oak stand? And I mean, I don't understand how this is actually improving the situation, because that stuff is like the Medusa. You cut one down and a thousand grows in its place. Right. I'm just not getting the big picture on how this works. And being from Texas, it's a little different mindset there. You don't get out a shovel without an erosion prevention plan, mud fencing. I mean, you don't do anything there without this already in place. And, you know, hopefully there is a broader plan that has not been presented to us that we do not see, because the plan that I read is no plan at all. It's a plan for cutting trees, but it's not a plan for solve one problem and create seven more.
Right. Yeah, and I'll let Derek direct it specifically to those type of treatments. But there's a couple different thoughts. No, there wasn't an EIS done on private land. There isn't usually. The whole idea is to, one, compartmentize fire, to not let it get to that broad scale that it's going to denude everything on the landscape. We're still going to have fires. You know, we'll have smaller fires. We'll have fires that we know that we can have control points at. Yes, there is some movement of material. Again, we'd be crazy to say that when we thin that canopy down to a point where it opens it up some, realize that it's opening it up to sunlight and to natural vegetation coming up that isn't there right now. The sun's being blocked out. It's closed canopy, most of it. When you thin that out, you get sunlight down to it. There's natural grasses that will come back. We'll go in and see underneath that if those natural grasses don't appear. The mitigation type, the mastication is such that it isn't wood, it's not small wood chips. Obviously some of it is, but it's a little larger, type of material, when those trees are ground up. The branches are there and basically that same coverage is there, only it's on the ground. We've rearranged it, if you will, so that if it did catch fire, it's the flame lengths off of that material is smaller, that we can get in there and work it with crews. Air resources can penetrate. If you've watched some of the retardant drops on fires, a lot of that gets caught in the crowns and the fire can burn right underneath it. When we thin these trees out, those tanker drops actually penetrate the treetops and actually get to do a lot better job of retarding the fire. It is a dynamic. The amount of ground that we are affecting is fairly small in the watershed. So we hope that we don't get too big of a effect on it. Sounds like we had from the Forest Service side, and we'll look at that and address that. They're soils folks on the forest. We don't have that expertise on the state, but the soils and hydrologists on the forest always review these projects. So again, that doesn't excuse the fact that some of that has happened. So we'll get that addressed, but hopefully you'll see a response of the oak. That will be a maintenance item in coming future, you know, areas, but also that restores some of that coverage from the erosion standpoint. I think once what would be really good is once we get some of that area treated, is that we maybe have an open house and have everybody come out and take a look, and we'll look on the ground and address those concerns. And if we have to mitigate some of that, we will. I don't know if that answered your question, but again, these treatments are minute in the impacts that they have, as far as if we didn't do them and had a wildfire go tree to tree in a contiguous span of fuel, the outcome usually isn't good.
Thank you, John, for that. I really appreciate it. I certainly learned a couple of new things there with the information that you shared. So thank you for that. Obviously, everybody understands that we're trying to do the right thing. And I really appreciate your comment that if there are any unintended consequences, that you're willing to address those and mitigate those. So I appreciate your comment.
Okay.
And does anybody have... Go ahead, Kevin.
I would like to thank you again for your comments, but we really haven't addressed the overall concerns of, like, the entire oak area. Is that to be burned in the future? Nothing personal against the National Forestry Service. The Left Fork Fire was an ember compared to the 533 square miles of New Mexico that was burned up from a controlled burn that was lost. I understand you guys have about a 98.6% success rate with controlled burns. 1.4% failure rate on this ranch is a really bad plan. I'm sorry, it just is. You burn 100 piles, that means out of every 100, 1.4 of them are out of control. I'm all for fire mitigation, but I'm not all for creating a whole list of other problems. You know, my concern as a property owner, we lose a fire and burn my house down, who's going to be responsible for that? We wipe our roads out, who's going to pay for it? You know, as a homeowners association, we do have some funds available, but they're not unlimited. Where does that place us as a community, as the individual? I mean, these are very serious concerns. Agreed. I do not want to see the ranch burn to nothing, and I get it. Uncontrolled fire is a very, very bad deal, and no one with a functional brain wants to just willy-nilly it and go, oh, everything's good, just stick my head in the sand and act like there's not a problem. But it just does not appear from what I see that the broader scope of this thing has been properly focused on, and you know, and as a private community, it would be remiss of the community owners to not focus on that broader scope. Thank you.
Right. And I understand your concerns. We deal with a lot of different communities we work in. As a state agency, as a state forestry agency, we deal with only private land. Okay. We do it in cooperation with Forest Service, our neighbors, if you will, across the fence. We coordinate a lot of that work, but our charge is private land owners. And so we don't take it lightly as far as burning. You won't see Spencer going out and burning these piles that we have, or if there's a chance for some prescribed fire broadcast burning, which is very limited when we get around houses, because we realize that we're taking that liability on. Future things to come as far as any fire that's prescribed fire on private land will have to be a shared liability, if you will, between the landowner and the state agencies running the burn. But that's in the future. We won't take any chances as far as burning piles. We won't be doing any spring burning, and that's what kind of caught the Forest Service a little bit. We'll be doing early winter snow on the ground, safe burning when it comes to that, because we, again, I'd like to think that we think the private land as our own. You know, if I was a property owner, that's how I treat a lot of our projects. So, you know, we realize that liability is there. The effects of some of the treatments, the erosion and whatnot, we do address that, and I anticipate fully that we're going to see more grass in there in the next couple of years. There'll be a short-term time that we may get some running, but in the whole scope of the project, you know, it'll be minimal. At least that's what we're hoping for. And Mother Nature's in control at any given time. This fuels work is everything we can do to prepare for fire. But in the worst case scenario, low RH, high temperature, high wind, all bets are off. I'm sorry. You know, we just can't guarantee that a community isn't going to be affected by wildfire. But what we can do is try and adapt the community that if we did get a wildfire, we have the best chance of surviving. Number one, protecting life. And then two is protecting property. That's as best I can answer your concerns. I hear what you're saying, though. And I'm glad you're involved. And I hope that you continue to be involved.
Oh, John, you're muted. Hey, John, you're muted.
Oh, sorry. I don't know how much of that was muted, but
just the last little bit.
Okay, sorry. I would encourage anybody that has those concerns. That's who we need on those that small group for the CWPP. I really would encourage you to participate because that controls where we go and what we do.
Thank you for that, John. Okay. Really appreciate it. Okay. We need to wrap this part up and move on. A couple of things I want to add. Number one, we didn't talk about it today, but we have talked about it with Spencer and Derek in the past. And that is that any work they do on Deer Springs Ranch that's adjacent to lot owner property, they're willing to work with individual lot owners on specific projects and specific areas whenever that's appropriate. So I just want to make sure all the lot owners are aware of that. And the second thing is, thank you again, John, for informing us that there's $1 billion of new federal funding available for fire mitigation projects with this new community wildfire defense grant. And I guarantee you that we're definitely going to have some actively involved lot owners at Deer Springs Ranch willing to help out and write grants and try to get our piece of that pie. $200,000 to $10 million per community, that's a lot of money available. And it sounds like we just have to do a good job of going after it. So I guarantee Excellent. You we'll have lot owner volunteers being willing to help out with that. That's All right, great. Derek, I'm going to turn it over to you for any final comments.
Yeah, I just added the phone number to the Panguitch District in the chat there.
Thank you for that.
Give it out to everybody so you guys can call on the firewood. As far as the erosion and stuff, Spencer and I have plans of coming in next year with seeding. This year we just didn't have the funding for it, or else we would have already spread the seed before the bull hog came in. Also with the bull hog, it's not going to be an excavator. It's actually going to be a front end loader with wide rubber tires, so it won't tear it up near as bad as those excavator tracks. So if I had a crystal ball and told you, you know, could tell you that you're not going to have erosion problems with this, that'd be amazing. But I don't have that crystal ball, unfortunately. But we will deal with any kind of problems that we have down in the future. And as far as burning, I just got signed off on my RX Burn Boss 3. So most likely I will be the one that comes out and burns the piles around your community, around your homes. And I'll tell you right now, I'll be out there multiple times making sure that fire is completely out until, you know, snow's on it multiple times and I feel safe. If it was my home, I could walk away from it. So Any other questions for me, feel free to text me, call me, whatever you need to do. I believe my phone number is in the email from earlier. So
I have one question. When you do clear that off and that, instead of let nature take its course, could we put some grass seed down or some other seeds that would root and prevent the erosion?
Yes, and so that's the seeding that we're talking about. We would actually go in with a helicopter and fly that project and spread grass seed.
You would do that? Great. Yeah. Okay.
So we're planning on doing that. We just need the funding for probably next year is what we're looking at.
All right. Thank you.
Hey, Derek, one thing to further answer that question, the only thing to do is to be careful as far as what seed we're putting out there. There's a lot of thought. We have folks from DWR and seed experts up in Ephraim that compose those seed mixes, and they're wildfire preventative type mixes, and they're also a lot of times non-invasive species. So what we don't want to do is create a monoculture out there that increases the chance for wildfire from a fine fuel standpoint. So as far as individual landowners going out and seeding, obviously on your private property, you know, have at it, do whatever you want to do. But when it comes to some of these projects, there is some studies and thought that goes into the type of seed mix we put out there.
Excellent. Okay, well, once again, Derek and John, thank you very much for taking time out of your day today to participate with us, to educate us, and to inform us about some new opportunities. Really appreciate that. And we will let you get on with your Saturday.
Thank you. Thanks for the invite.
All right. Thanks, guys. You're welcome. You're welcome to continue on with our meeting. However, I kind of have a feeling that you probably have other things on your to-do list for today.
Yeah. Thanks for the invite. Really appreciate it. Like I said, if you guys have any questions, feel free to contact me or Spencer. Spencer will be back at the end of this next week. So he'll be running around again down here in King County. So.
All right. All right. Thanks again, guys. Appreciate your time. Okay. Next on our agenda, we're going to go to our treasurer's report with Mr. Joe Bose. Take it away, Joe.
I think Joe wanted me to cover the numbers because he wasn't able to log in from the ranch because of all the firewalls between QuickBooks and the bank. So I can quote the numbers that Joe usually does. Is that right, Joe?
Thank you.
Okay.
That's correct. Thank you.
Okay. In our checking account, we have $107,216.35. In our savings account, we have $61,259.72. And in our special savings, we have $4,274.62. As I noted when I sent out the meeting request, I will have to send out financials to membership separately next week. I got caught with a family situation that pulled me away from ranch business right at the end of last month, which is when I would have been going through the books and reconciling them. But I did pull a few key points from QuickBooks that would be of interest. We have 6 members who have yet to pay their 2022 annual assessment, and we have 2 members that are still in arrears for both 2022 and 2021. That's a total of about $5,000 plus some finance charges, which puts us at 97% of assessments collected at this point of the year, which parallels previous years. Cabin reservation income is at 250% of budget. So we've got almost $45,000 in cabin income thus far against a budget of $18,000 with another almost $15,000 to come. And that's because of the movie production company that is coming to the ranch mid-September through mid-October and renting the majority of our cabins. So that's a significant overage, and the board is discussing how best to apply that overage to ranch expenses. But just be aware that that is a very nice chunk of money, a significant gain there. And we've got 47% of our budgeted expenses spent, yet we are 58% through the year. And that just goes to what we mention on a fairly regular basis. And that is that a lot of the ranch expenses are back-end loaded. So we are in a good position expense-wise. So that's financial and treasurer. I don't know if Joe has anything he wants to add or anybody else with any financial insights.
We're good. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Happy to help. Should I move into office?
Do we have any questions regarding the financials before we move on to Jennifer's office report? Okay, so everybody knows the financials will come out from Jennifer next week. So, Jennifer, take it away on the office report.
Okay, we had a couple of late joiners here that I can't figure out who they are. 435-691-3449. Who is that? And if you've joined in the last 15 minutes.
That's Larry Carson.
Oh, is that Larry? Carson. Deal. Okay. And I've got a couple of generic call-in users. So I don't know who those individuals are, but if you've joined in the last probably 10, 15 minutes, just do me a favor and put your name in the chat. That would be great. Okay, with regard to election ballots, everyone should have received their ballots by now. Those were mailed out on August 3rd from the Las Vegas Post Office. So if you have not yet received your ballot, keep a very close eye on your mailbox because it's been almost, 10 days. And I've already started to receive a whole bunch of them back, so I know that they
are. I got mine yesterday, Jennifer.
Oh,
yesterday.
Wonderful, Sally. Good to know. And if anybody needs the candidate profile document electronically, just send an email to DSROA, and I'm happy to respond with the email version. Look at that. Mike's ready to go. He's got his ballot. I know that there are a lot of people maybe that are waiting for the ballot to be forwarded to whatever email or whatever mail address they're currently at. But if you want to start researching the candidates, I'm happy to share that electronic version of the candidate profile document. And a final reminder to everyone that you must be current in all amounts owed in order for your vote to count when they're tallied at the annual meeting on September 10th. So that includes any outstanding invoices for maybe cleaning fees for a cabin stay, of course, annual assessments, anything like that. So no outstanding amounts on any accounts in order for the vote to count the day that we tally on September 10th. And then last but not least, keep an eye out for an email with a link to fill in how you would like to contribute to the annual meeting coming up September 10th. Potluck, auction, volunteers, setup, cleanup, whatever the case may be. And Mike will have some more information on that when he covers it, so I won't get into detail there. And that's what's going on in the office.
Jennifer, one quick question, clarification. In the past, we've always accepted ballots at the meeting. So the morning of the annual meeting, some people actually bring their ballots with them and turn them in at the meeting. I'm assuming we're still going to be doing that this year. Is that correct?
Yep. We will accept ballots in person. And if someone arrives at the meeting in person, and has not received their ballot via mail, we will have ballots on a provisional basis provided just to be sure that the vote is counted if it didn't arrive via mail, but that person is at the ranch to hand it in person.
Okay, thank you for that. Any other questions for Jennifer regarding the office report before we move on? Okay, I'll take that as a no. So next item on our agenda, property management report, Mr. Kurt Jacobson. Take it away.
Okay, so we got the fence in Podunk to be starting in September, and that'll be the north and south section of it. It's about a mile and an eighth. We're going to do half of it this year, and we're going to do half of it probably in January. We have an issue with cows getting into the forest through the open gate at the west side of the Ponderosa Grove. And I spoke with BLM because there's that culvert that's hanging out over the wash about a mile and a half down from headquarters. And it serves no purpose. And the problem is that's a BLM cattle guard, and it's state land where we need it. However, I was informed that nobody would look and see if that cattle guard was missing. In other words, we're going to pull that out, and I'm working to schedule the installation at that gate so cattle won't be getting into the forest anymore. Brent and I have been working on the inverter. Went down, for those of you who don't know, here at headquarters. And Brent and I worked on that for a few days. He purchased a new Midnight controller, which is kind of amazing because the old inverter was about 130 pounds, and this new one is probably 10. So, and it also has a controller in it, and it seems to be working very well. In case anybody has noticed, I reseeded all the lawns at headquarters, and I've been letting the weeds grow up a little bit. And after this rainy spell, I'll be able to mulch all that over the seeds, and we will have a beautiful lawn for the annual meeting. The backhoe, the shuttle switch finally came in. We got the backhoe is up and running. We've been cleaning up in the petting zoo, and we're getting ready to do some reorganizational work in there to make it a little more efficient to work in. And I put in a new culvert in the gravel pit, that culvert that we've been talking about for a while. Now, the backhoe's going. I finally got that put in yesterday. And then we're discovering that our old fuel tank gasoline is probably leaking a fair amount of fuel. And so it's on my agenda to get that new fuel tank installed. And I need to talk to Roland Bean about parts and hookups and everything so we don't have so I have everything I need to do that project. And that's about all I got.
All right. Thank you, Kurt. Anybody have any questions for Kurt? Okay. I'll take that as a no. So moving on. Next item on the agenda, I wanted to just share some information on a few different topics with everybody. We actually talked about rattlesnakes and rattlesnake safety at our last board meeting last month. But I wanted to let everybody know that there have been a couple of instances at the ranch where one member's dog got bit by a rattlesnake with lots of subsequent medical problems. Kathy told me that one of her neighbors, or I'm not sure, Kathy, if it was one of your neighbors or just a friend of yours, came out one morning and found that their horse had died due to a rattlesnake bite. What's the clarification?
That was a friend in Johnson Canyon, and she could tell it was sick, and they later found out that it had been bit. But the neighbor here in Johnny Brown was bit and had a lot of problems, and that was the dog.
Okay, got it. So here's the bottom line. We're seeing a lot more rattlesnakes on the ranch this year than we've seen in the past. I have never seen a rattlesnake on my lot until this year. And this year, I saw three separate rattlesnakes within 3 weeks. And a couple of times, my puppies, I have two little puppies that were within 10 feet. One of the rattlesnakes that we found on our lot, we found because one of my granddaughters, who's 10 years old, was literally climbed up on some big rocks that were kind of, we had a stack of big rocks. And I found out about it. I was about 30 yards away from where my granddaughter was on top of this pile of rocks because she climbed up onto the top rock and I started hearing a rattle. And so I turned and looked. She was literally standing about 12 inches above where the rattlesnake was, hiding down in between the crevice of the rocks she was standing on and the one directly underneath it. So obviously I tried to, you know, hey, come on over here. I tried to get her away from there as quickly as possible without scaring her to death at the same time. So bottom line is we put some rattlesnake prevention information on our website. So any of you that have pets, any of you that have small children, and obviously for any of us as adults as well, there's a lot of information now available on our website. I encourage you to go find the information and take steps to be prepared in case you find a rattlesnake on your property. The veterinary clinic in Kanab is an excellent clinic. The veterinarian at that clinic is one of the owners at Deer Springs Ranch. I mean, he's a part of our community, and he's obviously willing to help out. But the veterinary clinic in Kanab off of Highway 89, they don't have emergency hour services. So if something happens at 8 o'clock at night, you can't just drive down to the end of Johnson Canyon and go to the emergency hospital. It's not there. It's not open. So, again, it's the old adage, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Now, we're already talking about a horse dying from rattlesnake bite. We're already talking about somebody's pet dog getting bit and having severe medical problems and having to go into the animal hospital in St. George to get treated. You know, heaven forbid we have a kid or an adult get bit at Deer Springs Ranch and not have the medical facilities to be able to treat them right away. So there are things that we as owners can do in advance to be prepared. For example, I just recently brought a professional quality snake grabber. It's this long, you know, 6 foot long metal rod that has a mechanism at the end. You pull the handle and you can literally reach out and grab a snake with it and relocate it to a different place without hurting the snake. So I bought one of those and I have it now on my ranch for use in the future. Vance Green shared with me that a rattlesnake can strike from up to 10 feet away. So even if you have a rattlesnake that's, you know, 5 feet away from you, you might think you're safe, but, you know, just be aware that those things, if they're scared, if they're, you know, if they feel like they're threatened, you know, they can reach out and strike someone as far as 10 feet away. So, again, just be aware, be prepared. The last thing we want is any other pets or any other people at Deer Springs Ranch to get bit by a rattlesnake. So, again, there's information on the website. Go check it out. Next item, ranch radios. We actually had some of the people at our town hall meeting last month ask that we talk about ranch radios in our next board meeting. So that's what we're doing right now. So we have ranch radios that are available to all owners for purchase. And Jeff and Tina, I believe I'm accurate when I say Jeff and Tina are now the primary contacts for somebody interested in getting a ranch radio and getting it programmed. And is that an accurate statement, Jeff?
Yes, correct.
So why don't you just take a minute and share with people the best way for them to contact. Kurt recently, you know, lost the ranch radio and needed to have it replaced. You know, anytime anybody needs a ranch radio, what's the correct procedure?
just contact us. Either come over, Facebook, email, let Kurt know, and Kurt will get in touch with us. Whatever. We're easy. We don't care.
We try and have them in stock on the shelves. But if not, it only takes at most a week to get them in.
Okay, got it. Well, I would encourage anyone, if, especially the newer ranch owners, if you don't already have a ranch radio, you should have at least one or two. And we had a situation that occurred a couple of weeks ago when we were up on our lot that if I had not had a ranch radio available, it would have been a whole lot worse. But because I had a ranch radio available, I was able to get help when I needed it within a matter of 30 minutes instead of, you know, having to walk to headquarters or do something else. So they are invaluable. In terms of protocols and ranch etiquette, I just want to put it out there that the ranch radios are primarily for information exchange. Hey, you know, something's going on. We want to let everybody know about it. Or if you, like when I was up there last couple of weeks, you know, several times people were asking, hey, you know, does anybody have some, you know, transmission fluid that I could borrow? Does anybody have, you know, whatever? So it's really for information exchange, and providing assistance among ranch members. We've had some concerns in the past that some people gave their ranch radios to the kids and the kids were down at the ponds fishing. And the kids were basically using the ranch radios like they were walking a lot of information that wasn't necessarily appropriate on the ranch radio network. So that's something that all of us as owners want to be aware of and manage properly for anybody that we allow to use the ranch radios in our possession. And then the final thing that I wanted to mention, and Cindy, I'm going to turn it over to you for this part of it. Cindy told me that there is a way to actually have a different channel that you can use on your ranch radio network. For example, to have kind of a neighborhood type communication. So, Cindy, if you would just take a minute and talk more about that, because I'm oblivious. I have no understanding of how that works or why it might be beneficial.
Okay, I don't mean to kick this down the road, but this actually more appropriately belongs to Jeff and Tina. All I know is that out in Johnny Brown, out in Podunk, there is a radio channel. We call it Beller in honor of Lee Beller, one of our longtime members. But so I am aware that that's possible, and I believe there are other neighborhoods that have their own channel, but let me have Jeff and Tina talk about that because they do the programming.
Got it. Thank you.
On the radio, there's an AB button. If you click the button, it'll switch on your screen from the DSR repeater to channel 2, 3, 4, whatever you have that set on. You can change that channel by the arrow key on your keypad. I've been thinking about trying to assign neighborhood channels like the Beller channel or the Broad Hollow channel, Lower Slide, Upper Slide, but I haven't gotten that far in asking people if they would be interested in that further, because we would program it before we program the radios for each of those channels to have those names.
So something to be aware of for the neighborhood channels, those are going to be line of sight. Those are going to have a much shorter reach, but those conversations won't be broadcast to everybody because those neighborhood channels don't go through the repeater. So you just need to be aware of, if you're going to be doing that, which channel you're actually talking on, and be aware of how far that signal is going to go.
Correct.
Yeah, basically the Beller channel is, say, channel 2, but it's just been labeled Beller. So it's a line of sight channel.
So right now we could say, I mean, if all the people in Slide Canyon wanted to do something similar, we could just say, okay, well, we're gonna say that channel number 5 is Slide Canyon. So right now, everybody who wanted to do that could just use channel 5. What you're saying is in the future, it would also be possible to change the programming on the phone itself. So it would literally say, you know, DSRPT for the main ranch repeater, and then that second channel, channel 5, would now show up instead of channel 5. It would show up as Slide Canyon.
Correct.
Slide Canyon is so big, it won't cover that whole area. The line of sight is maybe a mile at 2 at most.
Okay, so maybe it would be upper Slide Canyon and lower Slide Canyon, but that's something that would need to be coordinated with the individuals in that area of the ranch that wanted to participate.
Correct. If a neighborhood currently uses a channel specifically and they want to claim it, we would just need to let us know so that we can put it in the programming.
Got it. Can I ask you, Jeff and Tina, to if you're willing to just take a few minutes and talk about that at our annual meeting?
Okay, we can.
Because we usually have a lot more people at the annual meeting than we do at a regular board meeting. And I think this is something that definitely deserves to be shared among as many people as possible, so that anybody who does want to participate would have the opportunity to do that. So, Jennifer, if you would, just make a note that we want to have that as an agenda item for our board meeting in September.
I'm doing it right now.
Thank you very much. Okay, any other comments or questions about the ranch radios that we can talk about right now?
Yes, just one point. Go ahead.
Sorry, Alex Charnetsky, 282. I'm definitely interested in picking up a couple of radios. If I email Jennifer and Kurt with my contact email, because I'm not on Facebook, Jeff, Tina, can I have them give you my email information and get you guys to send me your email, and then we can coordinate picking up a couple of radios?
Of course.
Thank you very
Jeff
much.
Jeff and Tina, just share your email address directly right now.
Fun
can
fact.
You do it on the chat?
Fun fact. Already in there? Since Jeff is running for the board, his email address is in the candidate profiles document.
Oh,
that is
correct.
Thank you.
It's easy.
All right.
You know, Jeff,
no, mine is a different one.
Okay.
Okay, just Kevin and Cindy, quick, did you want anything to add? Go ahead.
Yes, just a quick point of etiquette. Please be conscious of your transmit button while your radio is on. A lot of evenings coming in, you get this constant clicking on and off and on and off and on and off and on and off, where someone is sitting on their radio button. It wipes out the use of the Deer Springs Ranch repeater, because while someone's transmitting, no one else can. So please be conscious of where that button is, because it's more for emergency or important use. You know, we don't want kids playing with it, but the other side of that is we want to keep it open. And that's just something that I've noticed in the past. It's been better recently, but, you know, it's an easy mistake to make. You're riding along, it's clipped on your belt loop, it's hitting your seat belt, and, you know, there you go. No one can talk.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for that, Kevin. That's an excellent point. So thank you for saying that. Okay, any other comments or questions about ranch radios? Okay, last item on this part for me, I just want to let everybody know that we are going to be having a water committee meeting. I also want to let everybody know we just passed for both the upper cabin system and the lower cabin water system. So we just passed in August, and in the past, we've had problems in August with with not passing, and there was a lot of concern in the past because, in particular, with some of the water lines being pretty close to the surface, there was concern about water just sitting in those lines, just slightly below the surface, and getting heated up by the sun in the hot August summer months, and that causing bacteria to grow and causing failed test results. So the good news is that did not happen. We put in an entire new water line up to the upper cabins last year. I was part of that effort along with several other people. So the good news is we passed both of our water tests in upper cabins and lower cabins for August, and we can all breathe a sigh of relief that hopefully everything is just fine. We'll continue working on the water systems to improve them and make sure we're maintaining them properly. But wanted to let everybody know that we are going to be having a water committee meeting immediately following this meeting. And just ask if anyone does have any questions or any concerns for the water committee meeting that we're going to be having. If you want anything you wanted to have brought up or any questions you want to have asked, now's the time. Okay, so I'll take that as a no. So that's the end of the official agenda for our board meeting today. We're only at an hour and a half. So we're doing fine, but we do have some final comments for all of the board members. Anybody that wants to say anything about their individual areas of responsibility, I just covered everything that I wanted to talk about. So, Kurt, we're now turning it over to you. Kurt, anything you'd like to add?
May I ask, there's on the agenda for you plans for the annual meeting, and I guess I want to ask in terms of that, Jennifer.
Oh, you're right. Sally, I apologize.
That's okay.
I just skipped over.
May
I apologize. I skipped.
That's okay. Yeah, Jennifer.
I skipped over that. It's right here on my list.
Jennifer,
I just skipped over.
Would you like any of us to send you items for the auction? That's my
question. Yes, please.
Okay, I will.
Yep. If it can't go to the P.O. box, the ranch P.O. box, if it's too large and needs to be delivered via UPS, email me and I'll give you a shipping address. Yep.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Sally. I apologize. I just skipped over that. So the annual meeting this year is going to be identical to the meeting formats that we've had for past annual meetings in September. We'll start out in the morning with a whole bunch of volunteers, hopefully helping to get everything set up. We need help for setting up tables and chairs for our potluck, et cetera. But Jeff and Tina, one thing I'd like to ask of you, if you're willing, I know last year you guys have a really nice big, outdoor tent cover that you volunteered to bring last year, and we had some people help you set that up. Do you guys still have that? Would you be willing to bring that down to headquarters so we could set that up for our annual meeting next month?
Yes, of course.
Thank you very much for that. I know that was really nice to have that last year. So it's not something
that. Hands to set it up.
Got it. Jennifer is going to be asking for volunteers in the email that she's going to be sending out with information on the annual meeting. So we're going to need volunteers for lots of things to get set up and then also to help tear everything down afterwards. And helping Jeff and Tina set up the canopy is going to be one of the line items on that help request. So the annual meeting will be the same as before. We'll start with setting everything up, and then the board meeting will start at 10 o'clock, just as we normally do. We'll have an opportunity for people to meet the candidates for the board positions that are open as part of our meeting. We'll have a question and answer time available so people can ask questions if they want to. And then after the board meeting, we'll have the auction. People who are going to be at the meeting, you can feel free to bring your auction items that morning. Try to arrive a little early so that we can get all of the auction items set up on the tables. And then John Harris will be doing the auction. John and Sunshine, again, this year they volunteered. John does an excellent job with that. And then while we're having the auction, Jennifer and whoever else is on the vote tabulation committee will be in the garden cabin tabulating the vote counts. And then after our auction and lunch, we will announce who the new board members are who got elected during the annual meeting. And then immediately following the meeting, all of those continuing and new board members will meet in the garden cabin for a quick meeting. And then we'll wrap up our overall annual meeting. And then after the meeting is over, we'll have volunteers to help take everything down and put everything away. So, again, the exact same format that we've used in previous years. And Jennifer will be sending out some additional detail on that within the next week or so. All right. Thank you again, Sally. Appreciate that. And now back to our wrap-up items. Kurt, anything you'd like to add to anything that you've already mentioned during the meeting today?
No, I'm good.
Okay, thank you for that. Cindy Olson, anything you'd like to add?
No, there's nothing new, nothing changed from last month. New questions.
How are we doing on the work camp for volunteers?
We have Kim, who is staying for, at this point, an indefinite period. Probably she'll be leaving sometime in late September or October. I will be leaving probably late September, maybe early October. I'm hoping to be able to stay, but Roger's work is going to determine that. And I haven't heard any, haven't gotten any requests from people that want to do work camping at this point. There are a couple that are still floating out there, but they wouldn't be here for the whole 2 months. So I don't know if that's going to work out. But it looks like we've got it covered.
Okay. And just a point of clarification. Let's say I'm an owner and I don't have anything on my lot yet in terms of a cabin, but I'd be willing to come out and spend a month or two in my RV in one of those work camper spots. So lot owners can be work campers, just like, somebody who's doing that as a lifestyle, correct?
That's absolutely correct. And while you're here, you have water hookup, you have septic hookup. We do provide propane. And if it's really, really hot and you need to run your generator for your AC, we will also provide fuel for that. So those are the benefits if somebody wants to come here work camp. Plus, it's a beautiful spot, as you all know.
It is. Okay, thank you for that, Cindy. Appreciate it. All right, Joe, you are next on the agenda. Anything you'd like to add?
Yeah. My wife and I have made 10 new screens for the cabins. I put 6 new screens on cabin 3, 2 new screens on cabin 2. I've got 2 more I got to install. And Kurt helped me install a metal iron gate with a screen on the upper cabin door on cabin 3. So now you can open that door and get some fresh air in through the doorway. Other than that, still doing different jobs.
Well, thank you for doing that. We just stayed in cabin number 7 for 2 weeks, and I guarantee you that you want to have those upstairs windows be able to be opened with a screen in them. In the middle of the summer, it gets very hot upstairs in those cabins, so that is a huge service to anybody that's going to be staying in those cabins. So thank you very much for doing that, Joe. Okay, and John is not able to be with us. Kathy, take it away, Kathy. Anything you'd like to add? I know you definitely have one thing to add, at least, regarding the road out in Podunk.
Yeah, the Lord has 17 cities that we discussed it in executive meeting, and I thought John was going to be there, but Larry is, so I didn't want to make record on this for the minutes. We did get approval from the Brinkerhoff on the Brinkerhoff S-curve to change that. Randy Fry looked at it, and he gave us a proposal. We're going to need at least a 16-inch culvert. The one that's there that's causing the drainage problem is too short, and it's crushed, and so it's causing the overflow washing our road away. So we can it's pretty dangerous right now. So we just need to find out from Larry if we can go ahead and get that scheduled. And I didn't know when he was going to be back, but also Kurt had mentioned that we have a 18-inch culvert, 16 or 18-inch culvert that we might be able to pick up. I think it was in Slide Canyon. I'm not sure. Maybe Crawford. I'm not sure. But anyway, so are good to go on that.
So the message to all the people out in Podunk is the repair has been okayed by Brinkerhoff, and now it's just a matter of us coordinating resources to get it done as quickly as possible. Is that accurate?
That is.
All right, cool. Okay, anything else, Kathy?
No, that's it.
And by the way, Scott, we can see you there. Good to have you with us. I was just stating Cabin 7. I love that door you manufactured for that bathroom pocket door. That thing is a work of art. Along with the kitchen cabinets. Okay, and Larry Clarkson. I'm not sure, Larry, if you are with us or not. Oh, it looks like Jeff and Tina have a new house guest or house member. Jeff and Tina, did you want to elaborate on that?
No, I figured Scott was there with Kathy, so all he's here with us, so I thought I'd let him be known.
Ah, okay. Very good. I'm not
Can you
sure
hear me, Mike?
Larry Clarkson is on with us or not. Larry, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. Well, welcome from Alaska. My wife was recently up there for a couple of weeks. She said it rained every single day except for one.
That's how it's been, with the exception of this last week. It hasn't rained a single day. It's been beautiful t-shirt weather.
Nice. Well, I'm turning it over to you. Anything you'd like to add for our board meeting today? Any comments on roads or ponds or anything else?
The for Kathy on the Podunk correction on the S-curve, I would recommend that we do not install any culvert over there smaller than a 24-inch diameter and at least 20 feet long. We should have some available. We will also have one available once I get home and dig out. Kurt installed a new culvert at the gravel pit, but the old culvert is still salvageable but needs to be dug out in a way that doesn't damage it. So I can do that here in a couple of weeks when I return, unless it needs to be done sooner than that. The deer hunt season is coming up soon. There are hunts, archery, muzzleloader, rifle, and management hunts that run beginning August 20th through November 20th. Most of those do not affect anything at Deer Springs Ranch, but mainly the rifle hunt, which is October 22nd through October 31st. So we'll talk a little bit more about that as we get closer. Other than that, I don't have really anything new or different to add from Alaska, other than I'm trying to bring a little salmon or halibut back for the annual meeting auction.
Larry, what is your ETA?
Hey, that's still a little bit up in the air. I originally was scheduled to come home on October 6th, but that's been extended because I have a group, my final group's coming in to fish and also bear hunt, and they don't arrive here until the 6th, and so I may stay like the 7th, 8th, and 9th and then try to be home for the 10th. I saw on some of the information printed that the annual meeting was posted as the 12th or the 13th, but that can't be correct.
Larry, you said October. You wouldn't be back until October 6th. Did you mean September?
No, September, yeah. My brain's a little foggy.
Okay.
September 10th is the annual meeting, correct? And that's I'm trying to come be home for that.
Yes, that is correct.
I just noticed in some of our other communication, two or three different places, for some reason, it was shown as September 12th or 13th.
I haven't seen that, but I don't doubt that that maybe a lot of times we do copy and paste, and so it's possible that something got sent out without that correction. But it is the 10th of September.
What Larry's referring to is a typo in, Mike, I think it was information you sent me, and you're right. It was a cut and paste, and I didn't edit it before I pasted it into the member email, so that's what he saw. But it is the 10th.
All righty. Larry, anything else?
I don't think so.
All right. Well, thank you for taking time out of your day in Alaska to join us. I know it's not easy, so I really appreciate you doing that.
Boxing up fish and sending this last week's group home today and then get ready for next week.
That sounds delightful. All right, so we are done with the official agenda items for today. Does anybody on our call today have any final questions or comments you'd like to make before we adjourn?
This is Kate Hoff with Lot 83. I got a quick question, maybe for Larry. What's the status of the gravel pits? I know that there's a lot of gravel generated, but it looks like most of it's being allocated to either the ranch or other lots. I mean, can we go about getting gravel in the next month or two? What's the process for that?
We are targeting to do more screening or crushing toward the end of September. I have to coordinate with Brad, but just with the time he had available and the time I had available, all the gravel that was generated has been bought and paid for or spoken for by individual lots. All of that has been actually hauled and moved with the exception of one pile that was one for one particular lot, and the amount that John Harris requested for Deer Springs Ranch, the association. There will be more available toward the end of September.
Okay, thanks.
Excellent question, Kay. Thank you for that. Anybody else?
Yeah, this is Ben Collinwood, Lot 227. Just a thought or comment for you, but there was a mention of potentially some extra income from the cabin rentals coming up due to that movie shoot. I'm not sure, but in your discussions as the board, when you allocate that, my thought was, you know what, those cabins could really use a couple of solar panels each. It wouldn't be too expensive, and that might be a really nice use for it to electrify those cabins that need it.
Ben, thank you for that. And just so you know, we are in the process of providing solar power to all of the cabins.
Is that already budget? Okay, great. I missed it.
Yeah, the lower cabins are about 90% of the way there. That's one of the things that Kurt mentioned earlier. He and Brent have been working diligently to get the new solar trailer that we bought for the lower cabins hooked up. There's still some work that needs to be done. I know Jeff and Tina have also been participating in that, along with some other folks. So we're about 90% of the way to having solar power to all of the lower cabins. That's the current major solar project. After that's completed, we own a second solar trailer that the ranch purchased earlier this year or end of last year. That trailer is going to go up to the upper cabins and is going to provide solar power to all of the upper cabins. So that's going to allow us to switch out some of the less reliable propane refrigerators and install electric refrigerators in all of the cabins, which is going to be a very nice upgrade. And it will also allow for a minimal amount of electrical power to the outlets. So, for example, solar power to be able to charge your phones or your laptops. It's not going to be enough solar power to power a waffle iron or a hairdryer. That's not why we're doing it. We're doing it to provide some a small amount of electrical power, basically for lighting and charging electronics, and that's about it. But that's already in process. So thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, that's great to hear. Thanks for that update.
Absolutely. Okay, any other comments or questions before we're done today? All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for joining today. Thank you for all of your input, all your comments. I love the fact that Deer Springs Ranch is a community, and by having everybody participate, it makes it better for all of us. So thank you for all your questions. Thank you for all your input.